Hello, friends. I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio Year 17. And it's also year 4 for the BC Cider Festival, held traditionally at the Pipe Shop, foot of Lonsdale, North Vancouver, where they assembled ships, especially for World War II. And my father worked in that room. I feel his presence when I walk in there. And this cider festival, I followed it for 3 of the 4 years. I missed the first year, and it killed me that I missed it. I really wanted to discover cider makers, because I found them to be like the drummers in a band. They're different. They're very different people. And it's the differences that makes their art so wonderful. So year 2, there were like 32 or 33 cideries. And then there were 35 and 37. And now, I believe it's 45 this year. It's growing all the time. There's going to be 100. And basically, I don't know if the pipe shop's going to hold it. They've already spilled out into the patio. Now, I couldn't do this without some help, starting with Sean and Kelly Pizio, who are 2 of the 4 organizers of this event. And they were the ones that held my hand and said, this is how it works. This is what great cider is about. This is what Basque cider is about. For example, this year, there's a cider from Malmo, Sweden, one from Spain, the Basque country, but they're from all over, frankly. And of course, in usual festival fashion, where do I start? Where do I finish? How many hands do I shake? How many interviews do I do? So I did enough interviews at this cider festival that there's going to be 2 shows. The second one might only be half a show, but still, those last 2 interviews are fantastic. In the meantime, we are going to be talking to Sean and Kelly Pizio, Kate Garthwaite from Left Field Cider, Christine Hardy from Riley Cider, who have an amazing story on Bowen Island, Gerda Latte from Salt Spring Cider, Matthew Vasilev from one of the most popular small cideries in British Columbia, Twin Island Cider on Pender, Clinton McDougall from Sunday Cider in Gibson's. And that's just part 1 of this cider festival coverage. All right, here we go. I'll just step out of the way and let the cider makers have their say. This is the 4th annual BC Cider Festival on Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the Okanagan Wine Festivals. This weekend, Taste Passport holders will explore the South Okanagan, including Summerland, Naramata Bench, Okanagan Falls, and Oliver. And on Sunday, June the 11th, the District Wine Village, Canada's first winery cluster, will offer the Taste Passport in the village. That Taste Passport will allow you to select 6 experiences from participating wineries. All the details and tickets can be found at thewinefestivals.com. It's the 4th annual BC Cider Festival, my friends. We are back at the foot of Lonsdale in North Vancouver at the pipe shop where my dad used to work. And when I grew up in North Vancouver, that was a bus turnaround at the foot of Lonsdale. And you didn't hang around the foot of Lonsdale. Now I'm walking through farmers markets and dogs and people and strollers and kids, and it's wonderful. I've come back to the 4th annual BC Cider Festival. Sean and Kelly Pizio are my hosts and my friends for first of all, turning me on to cider, and secondly, this festival. And you have partners.
Yes, we do. So we have Rich Massey and Michael Broadbent, who are our co-founders.
So what do you remember about the first 3?
It feels like it's been a while. You know, we had a bit of a break from COVID there. You know, our first year, we didn't know what to expect. And, you know, we were in a very small event venue, and we were blown away by the response and how quickly we sold out. And every year has just been a bigger and better response from the public. And the cider makers are super on board, and everybody's been super supportive. And yeah, now we're back after COVID, and the response has been fantastic.
Do you remember year 1?
No, I don't remember yesterday. No, yeah, year 1 was really great. You know, kind of put it together in a few months, sold out super fast, and that's history.
Yeah. You were on to something.
We were on to something.
Okay, so here's the thing. This is the 4th year. What changes have you noticed that are kind of obvious that you trip over in the first 3 years and year 4 in terms of just ciders and the cider business, the cider community?
Oh, the cider community is amazing. Everyone's so helpful, and everyone's, you know, great friends. And I think the cider drinkers now are kind of getting more educated, and, you know, they're asking really great questions about cider. And the cideries have just, their ciders have gotten really amazing. And Yeah, the whole community just stepped up.
Yeah, and over the last couple of years too, you know, even in that space since we did the last one, 2019, the number of cideries has increased by a lot. You know, there's cideries here today that we've never actually been to, even as huge fans of ciders. You know,
does that include Malmo?
Yes. no, but there's some cideries that, especially from the island, that we just haven't had a chance to visit yet, and now we're excited because there are going to be here today.
Is it because they're popping up as fast as you can look?
Yeah, that's basically it. You know, there's a lot of new ones that have come online in the last couple of years, and that sort of speaks to the growth of the cider industry for sure.
Okay, speaking of growth, if you had 100 cideries, would you have 100 cideries here, or are you choosing now who's pouring?
You know, I think we've, since the very first year we did this, you know, our idea for the event is to be an inclusive event for all cider makers in the province and to showcase all the scales, you know, from large production to very small craft producers, and, you know, let the public enjoy both and, you know, kind of pick their favorites and see what's available in the market. So, you know, if there was 100, I think we would try to find a venue to support all 100.
Wow.
You know, I think this industry is still small enough that we can support everybody, and, you know, the big ones can help support the small ones too. And we see that, you know, today in the room we've got some very large cideries, you know, helping out and helping set up and showing the small guys how it started.
Like Ward's is huge. It's 80,000 cases, I think.
Yeah, and they've a very old cidery. They've been around for a long time now.
And what's the smallest?
Ooh, I'm not sure anymore. I
would say probably on the small end of the scale, you've got someone like Twin Islands from Pender Island.
Who won the damn thing?
Yeah,
they did.
Who won it?
They won the People's Choice Awards the last time we had the event. Yeah, they're a fan favorite. Very limited production run. Everything is basically done on site on the cidery by Matt and Katie, the owners, and it's impressive what they do.
And here's the thing. I interviewed them at the Natural Wine Festival in Victoria, and I'm going looking around going, you're a cidery, what are you doing here? It was fantastic.
That's great. Yeah, I find some ciders now, you don't know if it's wine or cider. A lot of wines too, you don't know if it's cider or wine. So I think that's really awesome. It's really opening the market too. Wine drinkers, I think, are coming on board with cider now that it's getting more wild and fermented.
Especially with the natural wine. I think the natural wine has really opened up those types of flavors to people. And you're seeing, more and more overlap every year from wine and cider, which it used to be more beer and cider, but I think it's kind of changing the last couple of years.
Remind me to ask you about sales in just a second. I made a note here about, there's a Spanish cidery.
There is, we've got...
You're my Basque connection.
I know. in the past, we've worked with Basque cideries, and then today one of our partners... co-founders of the event, he's got some import ciders from Zapayán from the Basque region. So, really fun.
And how different are they? Are they as different as the Basque people?
They can be. A little rougher, a little more tart, but in a great way. I would say maybe like a few years ago, they would be radically different than anything we had here. But I think the market is changing, and you're seeing some local cideries now starting to really be more in that style. With higher VA, the acidity's gone up. A little more funkiness and kind of wild fermentation happening. So I think it's starting to catch up.
Sean and Kelly Pizio, who are the creators of this BC Cider Festival, year 4. Okay, who's the number person here? And what are the, like, cider sales?
Ooh, in terms of retail?
In terms of hard, cold cash, like, and how much they're making.
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure on their end, but yeah. I think people are looking for gluten-free options. You know, less beer. There's some lower alcohol ciders now, so I think people are switching to cider. Hopefully.
Well, the festival helps.
It does help. Yeah. Well, that's part of why we put it on, is to kind of showcase the cideries from all around the province to predominantly a Vancouver market and Vancouver fans coming out for the event. So,
As Kelly sat down, I said, "What about Victoria? Can we have a festival in Victoria? Maybe down the way if we petitioned."
Yeah, it's something that we've always had other ideas for. You know, now that we've kind of established the BC Cider Festival here, you know, there's opportunities for other events potentially around the province, both on the island or maybe in the Okanagan. Mm-hmm. We're also looking at continuing our awards program, something we've done in the past. I think there's a great chance to to showcase and give out awards for, you know,
celebrate the
industry. So that's something we're going to be continuing maybe in the fall.
Okay, trends. What should I be asking in terms of questions today about trends? Last time it was hops, right?
Yeah, hops were good. I think natural fermentation is going to be the hot new ticket.
I think you're going to see, you know, in the past we've had more the kind of the traditional fruit ciders that you'd expect in BC, like your peach and cherry and raspberry. But I think today in the room you're going to see some more experimental fruits, some more interesting fruits that people are starting to use, more botanicals. You know, there's going to be a few rosemary and all kinds of fun stuff in there.
Are we going to get a kelp cider?
I'm actually surprised.
Is it inevitable?
I think it, I don't know. It would be interesting to get that kind of briny note in there.
That'd be interesting, actually.
It's a limit.
If you're into briny notes in your cider.
Good with food?
Yeah, I would be interested. And, you know, there's some cideries that I think could probably pull that off.
Yeah.
How have these 3 years, now 4 years, of cider profile helped the cider industry and we, the consumer?
It's one of the few chances. There's large wine events. There's large beer events, but in the past there wasn't a large cider event that brought together ciders from around the province into one spot where you could just go and try them in one afternoon. Even if you go to the liquor stores around here, you know, you've got a limited selection of sometimes only a handful of different cideries. Yeah, it's a chance to actually try ones you've never heard of before.
And keep asking over the counters, why can we get some of this? Right?
And that's exactly how it works. If there's stuff that you've enjoy or cideries that you want to see, talk to your local buyer at your liquor store and put that bug in their ear and tell them to order in a case or two.
I describe some of the cider makers, cider people just around cider, as being like the drummers of the band. They're just sort of, they disappear, they come back, they're there. What happened? Oh, he took his sticks. Here's the deal. Who is now the cider drinker? Who is the cider consumer?
Ooh, that's an interesting one, because I think that perception has changed a little bit as well, you know, in the past, from running the event and doing pop-up cider bars and things like that. You know, I think traditionally people thought it was, just, you know, predominantly, you know, women drinkers. But I think that is kind of a myth. You know, we've seen that time and time again. You know, it crosses all demographics, all age groups. I think you're seeing, just as Kelly mentioned before, people who are just looking for a healthier, quotes, air quotes, option than beer. You know, it's something that, you know, it's lighter, it's gluten-free. I think we're seeing a huge amount of growth in the gluten-free market as people are looking for options there.
And it's lower alcohol than wine. So I think it's, you know, more sessionable than maybe a glass of wine. So I think maybe people are turning to ciders
a little bit
more for that too.
Yeah, because you can get a big bottle, like a 750 milliliter bottle, and go to the park and have a great afternoon, but it's only, you know, 7-8%.
And Kelly, age. Has the age of the drinker dropped, do you think?
Maybe. Yeah, I think, you know, my sister's here and she's 22 and she loves cider, so it's a good start.
Did you put her to work?
Oh, yeah, she's running around.
Okay, so how many people are you expecting?
We're expecting around 1,000 public and a fair number of trade and industry people as well.
And how many cideries?
We're around 40 cideries 40, right now.
Yeah.
You remember when you had to kick open the door?
Oh my gosh.
Like, you know, the first time it was it was enclosed in here. All of a sudden you come back the next year and the doors are open and you're on the patio.
We're on the patio, we got music,
and
we got DJ.
Who knows what it's going to look like next year? You know, we've got some plans to continue growing.
Victoria, you're coming to Victoria?
It's not out of the question.
No.
What's your website?
BCCiderFest.ca.
And Kelly, what's the Facebook page?
BC Cider Fest.
It's so good. By the way, if you need any information on the BC Cider Fest, go to Kelly's Facebook page. It's fantastic. All the information, photos, everything you need is there.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
No, we appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
I guess we better open the doors now.
Yeah.
Now the fun starts. Yeah.
Start drinking cider.
If I see you at the end when it's rocking, I'm gonna just say goodbye. Bye.
We appreciate it. Thanks
Thank
for coming
you so
out.
Much.
Sean and Kelly Pizio, who are the creators of this BC Cider Festival, and you have partners.
Yes, we do. So we have Rich Massey and Michael Broadbent, who are our co-founders.
Year 4. Here we go. Pipe Shop, North Vancouver. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the Okanagan Wine Festivals. This weekend, Taste Passport holders will explore the South Okanagan, including Summerland, Naramata Bench, Okanagan Falls, and Oliver. And on Sunday, June the 11th, the District Wine Village, Canada's first winery cluster, will offer the Taste Passport in the village. That Taste Passport will allow you to select 6 experiences from participating wineries. All the details and tickets can be found at thewinefestivals.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery on the Naramata Bench. Now here's something you don't want to miss. New Kids on the Bench, the Hillside Bistro Collaboration Culinary Dinner. As the chefs of the Naramata Bench come together for a legendary wine and dine event, Monday, June the 12th. Hillside wines to watch for: Below the Road Rosé, the new 22 Goo in Pinot Blanc, the 2019 Gamay, and the platinum-winning 2021 Heritage Viognier. You can find all the details at hillsidewinery.ca. Kate Garthwaite, Left Field Cider Company, Logan Lake. Actually, myself and Kate Garthwaite could try to figure out when we last talked, but it has been a while. But the story has always stuck with me. That is Left Field Cider Company, Logan Lake. I'll tell you my story just in a second. Teresa and Kate Garthwaite, sisters, form the flag wavers for everybody who works there and grows and makes incredible cider. When we last talked years ago, you were sort of just getting started the journey. When did you decide to make cider in that part of the world, which is my favorite trout fishing spot in the world?
Awesome. So I was living in Vancouver in 2009, I believe, and I just got really interested in cider. And so I, at the time, did a small course in Washington State, and then I decided if I want to learn about cider, I should go to where it all began. So I moved to England for a year to work as a cider maker.
You
there.
You used it as an excuse to go and drink in England.
That is true. That is 100% correct, and it worked out. And so I came back here in 2011, and my sister decided she was interested as well. And so we planted an orchard and released our first batch in 2012.
So the planting was based on what perhaps you had been educated on in England, but also what was going to grow there?
Exactly. We are pretty high up in terms of elevation.
And hot.
So but because of our elevation, we get frost a lot later. So we had to grow things that, because we're outside the Okanagan, that would work for us. So we actually have a lot of crabs and a lot of like more cold hardy apples. And then we have a grower in the Okanagan who grows bittersweet cider apples for us.
So you have your fruit.
Yeah.
It's off the tree. Then you have to decide, well, what are we going to make with this? What was it, what you wanted to make, or what the apple told you that it was going to make?
I think a little bit of both. Definitely the apples were different than what I was using in the UK. So I had to kind of play around with what I could make. So we started out just with two ciders, a dry and a medium dry. And then kind of as more of the bittersweet apples came online, we tried new things. And then we kind of started getting into adding different fruits post-fermentation, which was something that I had kind of never done before, but was really popular. So we've played around with that. And now we have a cider club. And part of the cider club is I release three new ciders a year.
Perfect.
So we have tons of new ciders all the time. And yeah, that's kind of how it's evolved.
And who are your drinkers?
Who are our drinkers? You know what? A full spectrum of people. People who are, you know, looking for something that's full juice, like a craft product, and maybe not quite so sweet.
Men, women?
Both. You know what? We find both.
Old, young?
I think we find all. You know, I feel like that's the great thing about cider drinkers. They really span the spectrum of people.
I assume that they had been wine drinkers, or still are, beer drinkers, scotch, whiskey, but cider has gotten their attention.
Yeah, and people who like that kind of, people who are interested in like where their fruit comes from, where their drinks come from, like a craft product. Often people, we also get a lot of people from the craft beer movement who didn't realize that cider wasn't something that's super sweet made from artificial flavorings, and it's actually something that's full juice, and that we find that a lot of people have come from that world.
Okay, Kate Garthwaite, rumored to be the sister of Teresa Garthwaite from Left Field Cider House. What are you pouring today? No, not just here, but over at the table.
So we have six ciders here today. Our flagship cider, which is our big dry, it is a dry cider made of a blend of bittersweet cider apples and regular eating apples. Dry, crisp, very easy drinking. We're also pouring our pear dry, which has no apples. It's a blend of Bartlett and Anjou pears. It's a medium dry. Pear ciders are never quite as dry as apple ciders because pears have sorbitol in them, which is an unfermentable sugar.
We all know that.
Yeah. Okay.
No, we don't.
Okay, so they're never quite as dry. And then I have a single variety Kerr cider, which is a crabapple grown at our home orchard, so it's quite tart. I have what I'm pouring for you now, which is a New England style cider. And so it is a cider, it's a heritage style that was originally from New England, back when they didn't have apples that would really produce a full cider. So they fermented apples with black tea and raisins. And they also added a little bit of extra sugar pre-fermentation. So it fermented, so it ended up dry but higher alcohol.
All right, so pour this in. And just once again, it's called?
It's so it's part of our Cider House series. And these are ciders that we only sell at our Cider House or online. So they're small batches. And so this one is a New England style.
The nose alone have me.
Yeah, you get some of that kind of like molasses notes from the brown sugar, and you get some, yeah, of the tannins.
Is it possible there's caramel in there?
There is. And the other thing you're going to get a bit of is it was fermented in a bourbon barrel, so you're going to get some of those smoky vanillins from the barrel as well.
Wow. How much did you make?
We made about 1,000 liters of that.
New England style in a bottle. How about cans? What are you doing with cans?
You know what? For us, cans are something we don't think we're going to go into right now, for a number of reasons. Right now, we're going to stick with the bottle, but who knows down the line.
Kate Garthwaite, Left Field Cider Company, Logan Lake. Because the sisters are making and crafting these ciders, can it be described as feminine?
It could be. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to describe a cider as masculine and feminine, but...
Because I don't think in those terms. I just think this is really good.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I was really happy with how this turned out. It's one of the ones that is maybe New England style. People don't know what to expect, so I often have to talk people into trying it, but once they try it, they love it.
If they like Cider House rules...
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Those were the apples.
Exactly. Exactly right. So...
Well, okay. Any plans? Anything you're going to surprise us with down the road this year or next?
You know what? I mean, we come out with 3 new ciders a year, so who knows? We're always trying to think of new stuff.
2 questions. What you were educated about cidery and cider making, did it turn out to be what they taught?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that my idea of cider has evolved from when I was working in the UK. Very traditional, long tradition of making excellent cider. And then I kind of had envisioned taking that and bringing here to North America. And I realized the market is different. Do you know what I mean? So I never thought I would make fruit ciders. And that's proven to be something that's been very popular, but also really exciting as well. So I still love to make traditional apple-based ciders, but also we've been really experimenting in ways that I had not thought I would want to.
And finally, have you ever taken your ciders back to England for those people who educated you to pour them for you?
All the time.
And what do they think?
Well, I mean, hard to say because they're my friends. They would only say it's amazing, but I hope they liked it. Yeah, I hope they liked it. I mean, it's definitely a different style, but yeah, everybody says they like it. But I mean, who's going to say different to me?
What's your website?
It's leftfieldcider.com.
Kate Garthwaite, Left Field Cider Company, Logan Lake. Say hello to Teresa. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio.
This is the 4th annual BC Cider Festival, foot of Lonsdale in North Vancouver at the Pipe Shop. It's a great building. The Saturday afternoon is going lovely outside of us, but inside, this is serious business. We're celebrating BC Cider in one room. And I have been able to find and coerce Christine Hardy from Riley Cider. And I wrote down Bowen, so I got that for a fact. Then from your website, hello, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
I love what I read on the website. It says, it's not just an apple. It's a story. It's not just a cidery. It's a living museum.
Correct.
Now, this can only happen under very, very, very special circumstances. What were those circumstances?
Well, we were fortunate enough to take over from the Rileys, John and Josephine. They were really big apple collectors. And so our...
Apple tree collectors.
Apple tree collectors, yes. Apple tree collectors. Wow. Yeah. So we have almost 1,000 different varieties growing in our orchard.
What did they think they were going to do with all the trees?
They just like collecting. I don't think they really thought it through. They just really loved, you know,
and
finding
they had the
apples.
Room.
They had the space. Exactly. Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So then when you're standing there and you're looking at Disneyland for cider drinkers,
yeah.
Where do you begin? What do you want to, what of those 1,000 choices, where do you want to start?
So I really focused on the cider varieties. I was really curious. We have some really unique varieties from France and England. And so I actually watched the orchard for a couple of years and saw which ones were doing really well, and then grafted those out into another separate orchard on our property. So we have a special cider variety orchard there as well.
How were some of those trees doing?
How were they doing?
No, but when you first saw them.
Oh, they just were, you know, producing regularly, you know, making great, experimenting with the cider from those apples and making great cider. So we wanted to replicate those out and make more.
You know, that's just for a cider maker. This is gold.
Yeah,
this is heaven.
Totally.
On earth.
It's amazing. Yeah, we're so fortunate. But it's a lot of work to take care of, if you can imagine.
Good Lord.
Apples are ready from July to November. So, because we have so many varieties, we're basically picking every week. It's kind of wild.
Are there some so rare that there's not many in the world?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's only, we might even have the last ones for some of them. So we're really passionate about trying to preserve all the varieties. Yeah.
And what's doing well there?
Which varieties? Yeah. We have a really good cider variety called Nehu. That is bittersweet. It's just really prolific, and it's doing so well in our orchard, and it makes an amazing cider. France, yeah.
Okay. Is there anything from like another part, like halfway around the world?
Yeah, we have some varieties from Kazakhstan, and we've got a few from Japan, many from Europe, Germany, Holland.
They didn't bring these home in their luggage, did they?
Well, I don't want to out anyone, but they might have just taken a little piece of wood off of a tree here and there.
My goodness. Well, this is something else. So now, what did you bring to board?
I brought our long-lost apples cider. So this is a blend of that orchard. So every year we make a cider from all these different
all
varieties.
Of them?
Yeah, we take it. We try to
That's
blend
a field
it.
Blend.
Yeah, exactly. A field blend. So it's different every season. This was our 2022 harvest, and there's around 500 different kinds of apples.
Get out of here.
In this bottle. No, for real.
I wrote down, because I've seen from your website, Long Lost Apples, Doppeljack,
yep.
Merry Mac.
Yes.
So Long Lost Apples, it says on the label, we guarantee you will taste nothing else like it. It's true. You can actually back that
exactly,
up.
Exactly, yeah. I'm pretty sure there's no other cider with that many varieties in it.
Wow.
It's just apples, yeast, and thyme, basically. It's pretty complicated.
I was going to say, it's... complex.
Yes, there's a lot going on for sure.
A lot going on. So take your time. This is not a sip by the pool.
No,
this is something you want to think about.
You really do want to think about it for sure.
Are we going to be able to find that one? That other side?
We have it in a lot of the private liquor stores around the Lower Mainland, but the supply is limited. Obviously, we don't make a whole lot of that one. It's pretty special. So,
and what's the plan down the road? You have this commodity right there.
Yeah. Yes.
What are you going to do?
We're actually working with the Botanical Gardens out at UBC. Mm-hmm. We're actually trying to replicate the orchard out there because I really want to make sure that it's preserved. So we're working away at that.
It is not just an apple. It's a story. It's not just a cidery. It's a living museum.
Yes.
And you're the key holder.
I feel that way, yeah.
You're lucky duck.
Yeah, I know. I am really fortunate for sure. Yes.
Well, you must like being hanging in this room. With all these people.
Oh, it's amazing. It's so much fun. I mean, cider makers are the best. I don't think I've met one I don't like.
What's your website?
RileyCider.com.
RileyCider.com. Christine Hardy, the cider maker. They are Riley's on Bowen. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery on the Naramata Bench. Now, here's something you don't want to miss. New Kids on the Bench, the Hillside Bistro Collaboration Culinary Dinner. as the chefs of the Naramata Bench come together for a legendary wine and dine event, Monday, June the 12th. Hillside wines to watch for: Below the Road Rosé, the new 22 Goût in Pinot Blanc, the 2019 Gamay, and the platinum-winning 2021 Heritage Viognier. You can find all the details at hillsidewinery.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Mooncursor Vineyards in Osoyoos. Gismondian Wine has given 6 of the Mooncursor releases 90 points or better: 2020 Contraband Syrah, 2020 Touriga National, and Mooncursor Malbec, 91 points each. With 90 points, Dead of Night 2020, Syrah 2020, Petit Verdot 2020. The Tasting Room at Mooncursor is now open. This week's spotlight on the goods: the release of the Arnay 2022, the 2021 Carmenere, which is a wine club exclusive, Malbec, and Touriga National 2021. All the details at mooncursor.com. It's the 4th annual BC Cider Fest, North Vancouver. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. We are heard, by the way, on Salt Spring Island. And Gerda Latty is here. She's the co-owner of Salt Spring Cider. Very popular. I don't think I have to explain, Gerda, what Salt Spring Cider is. It's established itself. Its footprint is pretty good.
Yeah. We're getting known. It's a pretty neat process. We pick wild apples, or feral apples, essentially, from all over the island. We handshake them, we wild ferment them, and then we make them into cider. So
Sometimes cider making can become sort of historical, because who planted those original trees way back when, or 100 or 150 years ago, and how did they survive, and what did we do with that fruit?
Yeah, well, terroir really does come into effect. I think you really notice. I can taste the difference between an apple that's 100 years old and an apple that's 20 years old, or a cider. You know, the terroir and the history walking through these kind of amazing orchards is just an incredible experience.
I guess one of the questions is, do you want to mix that old tree with the new tree?
You can, yeah.
I mean, I know you can, yeah. But do you want to do it singularly as well?
You can. Yeah, I think what we tend to do is isolate the kind of Salt Spring apples, and then we get some eating apples, which we turn into more of our modern ciders. But the heritage ciders and the English ciders, we marry together for the most part, and then the eating apples we keep separate, and we turn those into more modern ciders.
Do you think people would be surprised to find out that some of the ickiest apples make the best juice?
Oh, well, they don't make that much juice, unfortunately, yeah. But they make the best cider. And I think also diversity of apples makes the best cider. So, single varietals are really neat, and it's really wonderful to taste what an apple ferments at. But we personally think the best ciders are blended.
What's the most different varietals you've had in one release?
Oh, gosh. It could be up to like 40 or 50 or 60 different kinds of apples. Sometimes.
When do you stop? What tells you to stop?
You know, nothing. I think the way that we pick and the way that we harvest means that we have to do a lot of really blending on the fly, pre-fermentation, and then we post-blend as well. So we have the kind of luxury, because we're fermenting in small batches, we have the luxury of bringing some of these flavors together, separate flavors together, to make a good cider. And it's challenging. We're learning what apples go with what apples, and we've been doing that for the last 8 years. So
we're talking with Gerda Latty, who is the co-owner of Salt Spring Cider. For example, in the Okanagan, in winemaking, mm-hmm. if you don't have enough nose on your wine, mm-hmm. you can add some Viognier or Petit Verdot, mm-hmm. and it gives it a nose. Can you do that with apples as well?
Well, yeah. For us, it's not quite like that, because, you know, we're picking from 450 varietals of apples on Salt Spring. We're shaking trees. We're putting them all in an 800-pound bin.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. But no, we are blending. But then we're blending those, we're fermenting those separately and blending them together as well. So there is control. It's not totally out of control, but it's like out of control and control, I guess.
So, Gerda, what did you bring to, not so much here, what did you bring to pour at the table? What are you pouring?
Today we bought a Michelin Pet Nat, which is Michelin cider apples, which is a really common cider apple, blended with heritage apples from Salt Spring, all of course wild fermented. And then we also brought a traditional dry, a farmhouse scrumpy, red grapefruit, a wild plum cider, and a hopped apricot cider.
What's in that bottle?
This is a Michelin Pet Nat, and so we kind of rebranded our small batch ones with just kind of some neat line drawings on the label. And yeah, I would say it's a really clean, simple cider. It's got no residual sweetness, but the sweetness, you can taste the sweetness that you get from the apples. It's got really nice earthy tones, lots of apple peel.
And how long, you have to tell people about the, it's cloudy.
Yeah, it's cloudy because it's bottled Sur Lee, so you bottle it partway through the fermentation and let it finish fermenting in the bottle, which creates the carbonation. So yeah, I think people should definitely, all of our ciders are unfiltered, and I think filtration is fine for some people, but I think unfiltered cider is really true, and it makes for really interesting taste qualities, and so.
Gerda Latty, she's the co-owner of Salt Spring Cider. Now, how long have you been making cider on Salt Spring?
We've been making cider for, I guess, 9 years. Yeah, we opened
in those 9 years. Have we finally, are we becoming aware? Are we getting to know cider? Are we doing our part as a consumer to know what we're drinking?
You know, I guess some people are more aware. I think cider's still got a lot to teach people. I think it's still evolving as a drink in British Columbia. I think there's more cideries open all the time, and I think the quality varies from different cideries to different cideries, and so yeah, I think it's an area that's still moving and growing for sure. Yeah.
Well, you're in the middle of it, and finally, I always assumed, because I saw so much of Salt Spring Island cider, that you were moving out of the province as well and into Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba. Are you going across the country with your product?
No, we haven't done that. We're just in BC at this point. We're tempted, but we can't do more than we can. And so we're trying to just
It is what it is.
It is what it is. Yeah. Yeah.
What's your website?
SaltspringWildCider.com.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
We're talking Salt Spring Cider at the 4th annual BC Cider Fest with Gerda Latty, the co-owner of Salt Spring Cider.
This is Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
If you're discerning in terms of your audio, you'll know that the room's going to get louder and louder and louder. So we're going to try to start some of the interviews early before the doors open. This is the 4th annual Cidery Festival, and it's a huge success. I have a Clinton McDougall, who is the co-founder and cider maker at Sunday Cidery in Gibson's. Were you here for the first, second, third?
Yes, we were.
All of them?
All of them, yep. It's been a while since we've been back. There's been a pause.
How long, well, in those 3 years, how much has cider making or the cidery profile risen in British Columbia?
To be honest, I don't even know how many cideries there are in BC now, but I believe they are all here today, and there's a lot of them. So it's a growing industry, and it's a great community to be a part of.
And so what did you know about, what were you aware of in those 3 years, this is year four, in terms of sales, in terms of interest, people asking questions, sort of people knocking on your door asking to taste your cider?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's an awareness of cider overall, and especially in British Columbia. We are the apple basket of Western Canada here, and you know, 3 years ago, there was maybe establishments would have one cider on tap, but now they have room for two or three or more. And I think also we're seeing cideries pop up regionally. So every valley or small towns and communities are able to support their own cidery, which I think is fantastic to eat and drink local.
Where are you guys located?
Gibson's, BC, on the sunny Sunshine Coast.
Of course it is sunny. It's always, they never talk about the rain up there. Did you start local? Did they drink local?
Yeah, absolutely. We got our start when we were both young men in Vancouver, kind of as a little side project. And then we wanted to raise our families a bit closer to nature and plant our own apple trees. So we moved over to the sunny Sunshine Coast, and we've been there for the last 3.5 years.
Did you do due diligence and look around and make sure that there were orchards up there?
Yeah, there's a lot of small orchards up there.
That's okay.
And, you know, I had people from the Okanagan, where the majority of apples are grown in this province, tell me that it would be a tough go of growing apples up there. But the beautiful thing about growing apples for cider is that they don't have to necessarily look pretty. And I happen to think that, you know, with climate change considerations, we've actually chosen a good location with the maritime temperate climate to grow cider apples. It will be a longer, slower growing season, but we're looking for that with complexity with our fruit.
After you sort of stepped out of your local area and started to sell the idea of a cidery from Gibson's Sunshine Coast, were we ready for that, or was it what was in the glass, in the bottle, in the can that sold you?
Yeah, well, when we got our start in the city of in Vancouver, in East Vancouver, we were in a small shared fermentation space, and we really built up an audience and a following with our brand of Sunday cider and our quirky small batch cider. And so I think in hindsight, that was a really great place for us to start, because we built up this following, and then moving to the Sunshine Coast, where we're able to sort of expand what we were doing, we already had this market just across the water, so to speak. But locally, it's great support, and that's what really keeps us going.
Clinton McDougall, who is the co-founder and cider maker at Sunday Cidery in Gibson's. Okay, Clinton, quirky small batch. How quirky? How small?
We have an internal kind of saying that we want to keep things suitably bonkers, and we're fairly small batch. So we have a handful of tanks. We do a handful of pressings this year. We work with a couple of orchardists, and we have a small sort of orchard and development on our property. So we really have a small footprint. You can get us in Vancouver and on the Sunshine Coast, and that's it. I'd love to be able to sell to some of my family back in the Okanagan and some of my relatives up in the Squamish corridor, but right now, just Vancouver and Gibson. So that kind of gives you an idea of how small we are.
What's growing wild up there, and what's been planted?
The property that we purchased, it's coming on 8 years ago, has a handful of heirloom apple trees, which we have not identified all of the apples. We've since planted over 500 apple trees in the ground, spanning 30 different varieties. Most of those occupying traditional cider apples, bittersweet, bitter sharp varieties with more tannin, acid, and complexity.
How many ciders did you bring to pour?
I've got 4 ciders today.
And you brought one of them. Well, actually, tell me the other 3.
Yeah, so we brought 2. A little bit of an overview of the ciders we make. We work with some orchardists and old family friends in the Okanagan that we get eating apples and dessert apples from. Things like Macintosh, Golden Delicious. These often go into our cans, which are a little lighter, lower alcohol, more fruit-forward, approachable. Then we also make cider with heirloom cider apples that have a bit more tannin and complexity. Those make their way into more like a 750ml wine or sparkling wine style bottle. And those are a bit more complex. We're really looking to get those on the dinner table. So I brought 2 of those. I brought a Twice as Nice, which is co-fermented with Syrah grapes. And then I also brought a Pet Nat or Petalint Naturel, which is what you have in your glass, Terry.
As good as this tastes now, you're saying it's going to be a bitter maybe a year from now?
Yeah, this is young. It's just been in bottle for a couple of months. But I think it's tasting good, and we wanted to bring something fun. So right now it's fresh. It's got a bit more fruit. But I think over the course of the next 6 months, it'll be even better. And I think within a year, it'll be even better than that. And that's something that we find with these more tannic, more complex apples, that they really can develop, mature over a little bit of time.
I'm okay with the cloudy, by the way. Are people okay with that?
Yeah, we don't filter or fine any of our cider. We just let time kind of naturally settle it out. And this one, having basically just been put into bottle at the end of fermentation, there still is some of that natural yeast. It's a live product.
Please tell the audience your website.
Find Sunday Cider on the internet and connect anyway, and come say hi on the sunny Sunshine Coast.
Clinton McDougall, who's representing the fine people at Sunday Cider in Gibson's. This is the 4th annual BC Cider Festival, Pipe Shop, Lower Lonsdale, North Vancouver, Lolo.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Mooncursor Vineyards in Osoyoos, Gizmondi on Wine,
has given 6 of the Moon Cursor releases 90 points or better. 2020 Contraband Syrah, 2020 Touriga Nationale, and Moon Cursor Malbec, 91 points each. With 90 points, Dead of Night 2020, Syrah 2020, Petit Verdot 2020. The tasting room at Moon Cursor is now open. This week's spotlight on the goods, the release of the Arnay 2022, the 2021 Carmenere, which is a wine club exclusive, Malbec, and Touriga Nationale 2021. All the details at mooncursor.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. To celebrate grilling season and all the great dads out there, consider joining them at the Unsworth Tasting Room on Father's Day weekend for a wine and ribs barbecue on the terrace from noon to 4. Ticket includes paired flight of 5 wines and a 3rd rack of Chef Dan Bain's smoked ribs smothered in red wine sauce and hot off the grill. Saturday, June 17, Sunday, June 18, noon to 4 on the patio. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan, North Vancouver, 4th Annual BC Cider Festival. Matthew Vasilev, we last met at the Natural Wine Festival in Victoria at the hockey rink. And Matthew, of course, is the co-owner and the fruit picker from Twin Island Cider. Was it 2 years ago that you won a Miss Popularity contest?
No, it was actually 4 years ago, and it's dated by our child. She was in the womb, and now she is turning her 4th birthday outside of the womb next week. So, yeah, it bookmarks this festival very well for us.
How much has changed for you in those 4 years?
Not a lot has changed other than that our cider club has become a main driver of our business, and that was helped in part a COVID response. And we have turned in a little more strongly towards grapes, planted a vineyard, and played a lot, gotten our feet a lot more dirty in the vineyard. So,
what caused the slight swing to grapes?
In part, seeing the sheer interest in natural wine take up, and we have always been kind of displaying a banner of natural wine, but you don't get taken quite as seriously unless you are spouting vinifera words.
When you sat down, we were talking about the trade response to the afternoon taste. How about in the evening when the general public showed up? What was that like?
Oh, that was really fun. It was really nice. In fact, for me, I'd say half the reason I was there was meeting in person a lot of our cider club members, just actually connecting. They've told me how much they've enjoyed it. So a lot of vanity and self-gratification, but actually just really nice to meet a lot of members of our cider community in person. So for me, that was the most rewarding part of the festival.
Is it possible to put in a sentence what winning the popularity contest here had for you?
It raised
the profile.
It did. No, I mean, we don't have a great wholesale game. We're still 15,000 liters. We still sell mostly direct. Back then we had a handful of accounts off wholesale. But really what it did for us was kind of confirmed that the general public was excited about high quality ciders, and that there was clearly a penchant for it. And so it was a great confirmation. I think in previous years, the best raspberry and red ciders are the most popular festivals. But to have had enough people vote for us for just making beverages from apples and only pears was great. So it was a confidence booster and an affirmation of making good stuff.
Just remember, friends, we're not fooling around here. We're talking to the fruit picker, Matthew Vasilev, co-owner, maker of Twin Island Cider. Explain the Twin Islands for people who don't know yet.
Pender Island is two islands, North and South Pender. There's a bridge between them. We're the only Gulf Island with a bridge, so Twin Island Cider.
Is fruit grown in the North Island different from the South?
We did make a batch that focused on the South Pender. We do, as a part of our kind of evolving orchard series and evolving club batches, we profile individual sites, locations, and the South Pender Pet Nat revealed to us just how much more Bramley seedlings were planted on the South Island. It's about varietal preference. We do make an argument for when we do a comparison of the King of Tompkins County grown on in Port Washington versus the more salinity orchards of Port Browning. There is a difference, one that we notice as the purveyors of the fruit, but generally speaking, you're hard-pressed to find microgeographic differences, but what we find is microgeographic stories and microgeographic histories.
He is Matthew Vasilev. He is the co-owner and the fruit picker and the maker of Twin Island Cider, Pender North and South. All right, so now what did you bring to pour over the table?
So today we have our Kauf Orchard Pet Nat. It's a 31 apple variety planted in the 1970s by a unique apple collector from Quebec, which is now my cousin's property. Then we also have the Bittersweet Pet Nat mostly from our own orchard and also from another orchard on Pender, and that focuses on Dabinet and several other select English bittersweet varieties. That one is brand new to release today. The traditional method Perry is a 2-year full hand-disgorged, hand-riddled bottle of Perry. And we have Katie's From Here, which we are drinking at the moment. And this is a part of Katie's, my partner, the other cider maker. It's her native clay amphora project. She digs the clay, processes the clay from our own orchard where the pond was excavated. And she then hand coil builds 200 liter amphora pots and in our house, and then they dry for cure for 3 months, and then we fire them in a kiln that's out in our garage, which has taken a lot of R&D to get to, but now we're on a roll right now, and Katie's building 2 pots at a time, and every couple months we're turning out some new pots, and we're getting ready for next harvest season where we'll have a lot more vintages under clay.
Katie knows that she could have bought the pots anywhere.
There is a 2-year wait list for pots from Georgia, and that wasn't the deciding factor, but I think to do something above and beyond poetic.
It's called passion for your craft, my friends. Passion for your craft. Make the vessel, grow the fruit, press it, take care of it, make it into cider, and then bottle it.
That's right. Start to finish, yeah. What I love about this cider is we had the expression of a 2-year English cider within a matter of 3 months in clay versus 2 years, and you're starting to get those raisin and brandy notes develop, which just adds that extra layer. The other part we have learned, the other secret we can give away because there's not many people who are going to build their own pots, working with 200 liter amphoras, is you can throw crab apples, quince, grape skins, and it mellows it out just beautifully. Like things that we would have said, that's insane. I don't like drinking high acid wines, and they come out beautifully mellowed and controlled. And you're, how did this happen? But yeah, so it's kind of magic. It's a magical pot. You throw things out, and beautifully it comes out. We've gotten lucky so far. We usually put our bets on like very expressionate, bold, in your face fruits, and just apples that have no business going together, and good things come out. So that's our take.
How much are we going to find of this?
This is one of the last cases, but the next release is out within a month and will be available probably for our next September shipment as an add-on for our club members. And a few cases will go to select places around town.
Are there moments where you'd rather be doing anything other than fruit picking?
Oh, that's a question that should be answered off air.
I'm your editor. I'm your editor. But you love this life.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it is the one thing that I get a sense of renewal, pruning the old orchards every winter. The hustle in the fall is fun, but it gives me extreme heartburn. I don't know why. It's a stress and apple allergy, I guess. But the winter makes up for it all. There is something beautiful and full cyclical, full cycle about what we do. And that's my quiet time. And I would prune apple trees for a living, I guess. Yeah, giving life back to another couple decades to a tree's life is kind of it's one of our motivating factors. And yeah, it's what I live for.
One more thing, any surprises coming the rest of this year or next year, your plans?
Oh my goodness. Still working on the vineyard for us and releasing hopefully our first vintage of wine soon.
What did you plant?
We have a mix of hybrids, Agria, Castel. Agria is not a hybrid, but a Lucy Kuhlman. We do have an acre of Pinot Gris as well. And we have Bacchus, another lovely hybrid that's taking well in Vancouver Island.
Did you think about Gamay?
Yeah, we gave Gamay a thought, but we still got space for more. Okay. We'll see how the Pinot Gris does.
We need some Gamay out there. Yeah. Okay, what's your website?
TwinIslandCider.com.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
I'm giving you your best opportunity, my friends. Twin Island Cider. Find it. And that is the first handful of interviews that we did at the 4th Annual BC Cider Festival Pipe Shop, foot of Lonsdale, North Vancouver, last weekend. There's more to come. Jennifer Molgat from Ward's Cider. There's a family winery there as well, The View, but Ward's Cider has been there for many generations. And one of the most amazing guys I want you to introduce you to next week, his name is Bruce McKinley, and he is the man, the creative genius behind Valley Cider in Duncan. Wait until you hear his story. And by the way, I think you can say now, congratulations to the Victoria Cider Company for winning most popular cider of the festival. Everybody who was there who tasted filled out forms, and they were on the top of most of those lists. We'll be back with part two of this Cider Festival next week. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. To celebrate grilling season and all the great dads out there, consider joining them at the Unsworth Tasting Room on Father's Day weekend for a wine and ribs barbecue on the terrace from noon to four. Ticket includes paired flight of five wines and a third rack of Chef Dan Bain's smoked ribs smothered in red wine sauce and hot off the grill. Saturday, June 17, Sunday, June 18, noon to 4, on the patio. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com.